welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Andrew Beck and David Kettlehake, as this is another edition of the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable. This episode, we will be discussing many film-related topics with the writers of Cottagers Confidential. But before we do anything, I have to welcome back both my co-hosts to the show. First, the editor of Cottagers Confidential, Andrew Beck. Andrew, welcome back to Cottage Talk.
Thanks for having me, Russ.
Listen, I look forward to doing this show with you. We have much to get through. You know, it's funny because I just did a preview show and I realized I didn't even put down in our agenda for today to ask you guys to predict the game tomorrow. So I think we have to end with our predictions for the game. But again, I look forward to doing the show because again, this is a different style of show. We're talking about film related topics, you know, quickly. But we can't forget about the actual matches. So we will end talking about the Cardiff City match, my friend. But you looking forward to doing the show today?
Very, very much.
Okay, very good. Let's bring on our other co-host. It's been a while since we talked to him, Mr. Kettlehake. David, how you doing?
Hi, Russ. Glad to be back, and especially glad to be back when things are going so well on the pitch. This is a nice turn, isn't it?
It is a nice turn. It's a very good start to the season, and I look forward to talking about an article that Andrew wrote with a very interesting quote in there, and we're going to talk about that because it talks about the start. But before we do that, guys, let's start the show by talking about a player signing. And Andrew, I'm going to start with you. We heard so much talk about this player. You know, there was so much social media discussion about this player. He finally gets signed. So I want to get your thoughts on the signing of Josebed Sanchez Ruiz.
I'm pretty high on him. It just so happens that he was also a guy the Seattle Sounders were scouting to possibly bring in as a DP.
Wow.
So I have a little bit of familiarity with him. I don't know how far along he was in the process, but I know he was in like their kind of short list before they finally signed someone from Boca Juniors. But so he's an attacking midfielder, but he's one who's like probably more of like a box to box attacking midfielder. He does have some defensive contribution. He's not your, you know, number 10 kind of Brian Ruiz luxury player where he's going to be creative and he's going to create chances, but someone's going to have to cover for him on defense. I haven't seen him play a lot. So, I'm just kind of going by what scouting reports and other people have told me.
No, very good, Andrew. And right back to before I go to David, what's interesting about him, and I think I saw some tweets from Silvisa earlier talking about him playing in the midfield, and he has played several different positions. Last season he played more of an attacking midfield role basically behind the striker. But what's interesting is that he's actually played a deeper role as well. So I think Silvisa has options to use Josebed in several different ways, or maybe he could play him in that attacking role. But then that gets you to think, where does he put Tom Kearney?
Yeah, that's kind of the kind of thing. I think it might be something where they Josebed can play in any of the three kind of attacking midfield roles if we continue with the 4-2-3-1, but
right.
Probably is best used next to Parker, Tunacliffe, kind of a little bit deeper. But then, you know, you can do that when you need to attack more. But if you need a more defensive shape, you can pull off one of Ayite or Kearney and kind of move Josebed up a little bit. And then you become a little bit more defensive, but you don't lose so much creativity. It's not like trying to play like Tunacliffe up on the wings where he's really that's him out of position.
Absolutely. Very, very interesting there. Andrew, David, over to you. Your thoughts about the signing and also what we're talking about, where he might fit with Fulham.
Well, first of all, I'm sure all the Fulham fans that had Brian Ruiz shirts are pretty happy because they can recycle those. And to be honest, when they announced this, when it was kind of coming around, I started doing a little research on him because I hadn't heard of him before. I didn't have that bit that Andrew had with the Sounders. So, you know, just doing some research, whoscored.com, whatever, and there was, and lo and behold, on our website, there was a really good article on him by Sarthak Kumar talking about him, and it seems that from this article, at least, and some of the other things I've read, that he may fit into the squad well. He's very passionate about who he plays for, and he's got a great work rate, and he's rather pacey. So that seems to be fitting into Slavisa's squad a little bit. I really wanted to see him play more. I mean, he was only in for, what, like 5 minutes of the Leeds match. And once he came in, I don't even think Gentleman Jim mentioned his name maybe more than once after that. So I didn't get to see him much after that. I'm hoping we see him a lot more soon, and then we'll revisit this. But, you know, we're a thin squad, so I'm glad to see him in here.
No, I totally agree with you, and let's hope Gentleman Jim sees him much more than he saw those insects in that last match against Leeds, David.
That was crazy.
Was that insane? Was that insane listening to that?
That's absolutely crazy. Yeah. I did have to laugh, but it was pretty entertaining.
I mean, him and Jamie Reed must have mentioned that at least two dozen times. I felt bad for them. I think Tom Kearney scored a goal, Andrew, and I think he swallowed the bug.
Yeah, just he definitely did. I believe a Gentleman Jim swallowed a bug on the goal, and I think James had swallowed a bug earlier because they were talking about it. All of a sudden, you could kind of hear James like kind of gasp and cough, and then he went on mute.
Well, with Josabed, yep. You know, I think he's one of those types of players that we're going to have to get used to, in that, you know, in many cases we haven't heard much about him before, and. You know, we're scouring the countryside high and low to find some of these players that fit the bill that maybe are not that familiar to us with Fulham and the rest of the championship. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be more on the radar after this.
I totally agree with you there. All right, guys, let's now go to the Cottagers Confidential Writers Spotlight. We have a couple of articles I want to talk about. First one actually is Andrew's article, so... So, David, I'll get your take first. In Andrew's article about the 1-1 draw for Fulham against Leeds United, he has this interesting thought. Andrew stated, quote, "It's very painful to not come away with 3 points after that performance. But if you'd asked any Fulham fan before the year if they'd taken 7 points after the first 3 fixtures of the season, they'd have taken it in a second." All right, David, what are your thoughts on that statement? I actually agree 100% with Andrew. Do you agree with him?
Well, you're not going to get any pushback here either. I agree 100%. In fact, I tend to tweet pretty maniacally during Fulham matches if I'm near my computer. And I think I even said that partway through. You know, I said it was 0-0 at the time, and I said, I'll take, you know, 0-0 and a 1 point right now. I'd be happy with that. And I did a little quick research on the Fulham website and went back and, you know, this time last year, we had 1 point. Before, you have to go all the way to September 13th before we had 8 points. So we're sitting at 7. I'm okay with that. You know, it was quite the letdown. Seeing Wood's goal a couple times was pretty painful. But
it was.
But I wasn't happy with 1 point after we were up, but beforehand, yeah, it turned out okay. Away, the middle of the week, all the way at Leeds. I mean, last year, listen, how many crosses did they have? 8, 9, whatever. Last year, that meant they would have had 4 or 5 goals. So I'm pretty happy. The opponent would have had 4 or 5 goals, so I'm pretty happy.
Okay, very good. And before go back to Andrew. I'm just putting myself back in that situation, hearing it, just like you did. And I was very upset, obviously, of giving up the league goal, excuse me. But now that I've had time to think about it, David, because, you know, again, I went to a match where I was in 2012 when Fulham played a 3-3 draw and gave up a late goal. It was a crazy 3-3 draw. And that became a little bit of a pattern under Yol, and giving up late goals has become a pattern. So I understand why Fulham supporters are concerned that they gave up this late goal, because they've done it before. But this is a different team, and I'm willing to see if they can learn from this, David, because that's a great learning tool that Slavisa now has, because he can point to this, to that team and say, listen, you know, hopefully this never happens again. Do not let this happen again. So, yes, I'm disappointed that they gave up the late goal, that they're not at 9 points. But I look at it and think, well, let's turn this into an opportunity to better themselves moving forward, to learn from that mistake. So I see it both ways. I'm disappointed. But how can I really be disappointed with 7 points so far, David?
Yeah. You know, and it was inevitable when the goal went in. First of all, they gave 4 minutes of stoppage time, which I couldn't figure that out. And when I watched the replay, I couldn't tell exactly when the goal went in because they don't have the clock up on the replay. But it had to be more than 2 minutes in. So, really, I think it was a little unfair. But, you know, it was an inevitable then that Twitter would just blow up with, here we go again.
Right.
You know, same old Fulham. And I'm taking a step back and going, no, it's not. You had a 16-year-old kid in there who hasn't even grown into his boots yet. If you watch him, you look at him. I mean, it's a kid. He didn't put his head in front of a guy doing a bicycle kick. Neither did Callis. It's just a tough call. But it's not the same team. It's not even close. Look how many goals he's given up so far this year versus last year at this time. So,
no.
You know, it happens.
No, it happens. And again, let's just see if they can learn from that. And like you said, yes, he's a 16-year-old kid. We're talking about Ryan Session, and I talked about this on a prior show. He will learn from that. You know, it's match time. He needs more experience. He will learn how to deal with these situations. And you know, it's unfortunate how it happens. These things happen. The big thing for me.
Did you see the quick interview with Callis about that?
I did.
You know, he said I should have put my head in front of it, even though I think he would have taken my head off. Like, Thomas,
I did.
You're a better man than I, but okay.
No, I definitely saw that interview with Callis, and very good point to bring that up, my friend. But Andrew, I want to go to you because I definitely want your thoughts about this part of it, because I kept hearing the same old Fulham, and I understand it. I totally understand it because we've seen it so many times. But I also see a team that only gave up one goal at the very end on the road, and we have 7 points. And this goes to your article. How can it be ultimately disappointed? And the bigger thing, the bigger talking point is going to be the reaction to this, Andrew. This is a tough situation. How do they react now from giving up this late goal? Do they come out and do they attack Cardiff City and take it to them? Because that, to me, will tell you a lot about this team, will be the reaction tomorrow against Cardiff City. So I want to get your thoughts about everything I just shared and also what David shared.
Yeah, like I said, it's hard to really, when you step back and look at it from an outsider's perspective, Fulham right now is on a pace for 107 points. So, you know, they get 107 points, they're being promoted. So you really can't argue too much against this. And this wasn't like necessarily the same old Fulham. This was a game that, if you go back and you look at the statistics of it, they absolutely dominated. They had more possession on the road. They had more passes in the attacking third. They created like 5 or 6 big chances. It was, I mean, basically every statistic they were ahead in. And sometimes you just give up a fluky goal, and sometimes the balls don't go in off the post. That's just one of those things that happens in football. So I'm not that concerned about it. It would be one thing if they were in Leeds and then they scored a scrappy goal and they were barely hanging on the whole time, clearing crosses, doing all of that stuff, and finally one went in. That would kind of be the old Fulham. This was, they dominated and then Leeds kind of got lucky at the end. So that's kind of the way I look at that game. And then again, it is, you're right, it's what this means going forward. Now, if they were to come out against Cardiff just completely flat and get blown out of the water, or they go up against Cardiff 1-0 and the same thing happens again to them, they kind of let their foot off the gas, that would start to be disconcerting. But I mean,
right,
lucky goals are going to happen. I mean, even when Fulham when they got promoted the last time and they had 101 points, they didn't win every game. You know, you're not going to win every game. You're going to get unlucky sometimes, but hopefully the luck all evens out over the length of the season.
No, very good point there, Andrew. And that's why for me, yes, if they struggle against Cardiff City, you know, we're going to be talking about going back to that goal, because to me, it's a character moment for them. You know, if they come out strong and they give it their best effort and they take it to Cardiff City, then that's a good sign. And we get all 3 points, because you can take this situation and run with it. Meaning, I've been saying, I wanted to see how this team would react, Andrew, after a bad loss, after a really bad loss, because you can learn a lot about a team after a bad loss. It's how you react to it. Well, you can also learn a great deal from a bad situation. This is a bad situation, like you said. Unlucky, you know, the late goal. Well, here is an opportunity to learn something about the character of Fulham Football Club, Andrew.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's going to be kind of how does the team react from this, and also it's how Slavisa kind of reacts to this, because I'm not 100% sold on the way he like made the substitutions at the very end of that game. I thought he maybe could have done a little bit more to kill the game off than he actually did, but maybe he'll learn from that a little bit too. That, hey, instead of bringing on, you know, Josebed, maybe I'll bring on Tim Ream for Sessegnon or something like that and go to a more defensive lineup.
No, very good point.
Hey,
there.
Russ, I agree with Andrew on that, and I know that Flavisa got some grief on Twitter for that. But I'll tell you what, excuse me, if I were Cardiff, I'd be a little concerned, maybe more than a little concerned, because I've always rated Matt Smith higher than some, and I think he's going to come out pissed. I mean, he had his opportunity to have 3 goals in 3 games, and, you know, it just didn't work out for him. And I would not want that 6'6" or 6'7", whatever it is, inch guy coming down on me. I do rate him higher than others, higher than FIFA, that's for sure. And I think they're going to come out really strong. And they're gonna look to attack, and I have a good feeling about the match tomorrow.
So do I.
I know it's not a preview show, but yeah, just
no. I understand. It's funny because on the preview show, I actually shared some information from a blogger of Cardiff City, and he actually predicted 2-1 to Fulham, and you know, and his advice was to attack us. He said, I'm paraphrasing, if you get up a goal, it's pretty much over because they can't score right now. They can score from own goals, you know, but that's from Shane Duffy. But beyond that, they're struggling right now. So his advice was to attack, and I agree with that. But, David, going back to you, talking about the reaction, because I'm really big into this, because I've seen it with other teams and other sports. I could talk about my own New England Patriots, you know, after a bad loss, it's about burying the ball, and it's all about how you come out after that game. And this is a great opportunity to see them respond against a team where again, has a day less rest than you do, so you should attack them. And if you do the job that you can do, you should win this match, and this is a golden opportunity to say to everyone, we're not the old Fulham. We're not the old Fulham, because it is about the response. Good teams respond. Great teams respond. To me, David, tomorrow is I'm going to say that it's an important match because I want to see the response.
Well, last season's Fulham, it would have been, well, you know, that's how it goes.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it
that's
just
what I'm
typifies
talking
our season. You know, really what would have happened last season was they got the goal in the 92nd minute and then another one in the 93rd and we would have lost. But this season it's a whole different squad. You can tell the attitude's different. You can tell the camaraderie's different. You can see that, you know, okay, we were winning in that one and they came back and they tied that up in the 92nd, 93rd minute. That's not going to happen again. I just had this feeling that they're – you know, their heads are up, and, you know, as they say, their tails are up, and they're going to come after Cardiff. And I think it's going to be a pretty good game for Fulham tomorrow.
I hope you're right, my friend. All right, let me bring on Andrew. Sorry, I was just getting a little feedback on your line, Andrew. Just wanted to have you come in clear. Let's move on. Let's talk about another article that's been on Cottagers Confidential. And, Andrew, I'm going to go to you. It was from James Eade. He wrote on the 12th of August an article entitled Cottagers Contemplation, Odoi's Adoration. He talks about the possibility of Dennis Odoi potentially becoming a cult hero. Now, again, this is all based on the first couple of matches. What are your thoughts on this? It's funny because Mike Gregg thought this before the first regular season match. He thought that Dennis Odoi could become a fan favorite. What are your thoughts on this?
I agree. I mean, he really could be. It's been a while since we've had kind of the guy like that, especially at fullback, because, I mean, he's fast and – you know, he can get into attacking areas, but he recovers well on defense, but he's really technically skilled. That was kind of the thing that shocked me. I mean, everyone by now has seen the video of that weird 360 trap the ball with your shoulder and spin around a guy move. In fact, that was on like one of the SportsCenter's top 10 plays here in the United States, which actually shocked me. I was watching SportsCenter when I got home from work and Fulham is on from a game in the game against Newcastle in the championship. I'm like, what? But if he keeps doing things like that, yes, he's going to be, because you just don't see like guys, you just haven't seen guys do that kind of stuff at Fulham, especially from his position. I mean, you've seen like Brian Ruiz and Dimitar Berbatov do that kind of stuff, but those are guys that where you expect them to do weird things like that with the ball, where Dennis Odoi is just like going a million miles an hour and then just like doing something very weird and technical that just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, listen, I totally agree with you, Andrew. And David, over to you, because what makes him different, because Andrew brought up two players, very skillful players, Dimitar Berbatov and Brian Ruiz. But Dennis Odoi is a little bit different because he has skill, but he has pace. So you combine the two, I think that could be two of the reasons why he could potentially be a fan favorite, because he is skillful, but he does have pace, and we've been basically just screaming for pace for a couple seasons now, and he now has that, and he has the skill to go with it.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to some of the friendlies, you know, and again, Fulham even highlighted this on one of their clips, him just charging after that one ball to save it when anybody else in a friendly pretty much would have just let it gone out. And, you know, the crowd got behind him right there. And you could tell right there that work effort, that work rate was there. You know, on the spinning back move, you know, Dummett still doesn't know what happened to him. You know, that happened 2 weeks ago. He's still spinning around wondering what the hell happened when Odoi just burned him like that. So you see his work effort, you see his pace, you see his skill. You know, I think he's still in a little bit of a learning curve coming in. You know, sometimes defenders get strikers get behind him or forwards get behind him once in a while, and you can see that, you know, he's got to work to maybe get back into position once in a while. But how long has it been since we've had somebody, you know, fullbacks that just crash all the way up to the opposing 18 and are sending in, you know, crosses and whatnot? It's phenomenal. It's so much more fun to watch, and you know, the more that they can press up there, the less time the ball's the other end. And I don't know if he's going to be a cult hero yet. It's too soon to tell, but I've really enjoyed him so far.
So have I. And listen, you know, on the other side, whether it's Ryan Session, I think it's going to be Ryan Session tomorrow, but I could be wrong, or even if it's Scott Malone, you now have two attacking fullbacks that are just bombing up both sides now. It's wonderful to watch, David. It really is.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we haven't seen that in I don't know how long, and it's refreshing. So that's why I can see why Dennis Odoi could become a cult hero of Fulham. Not only that, you could obviously see on the other side, Ryan Session being the same, for different reasons because of all the skill, and he's only a 16-year-old kid, and he's going to have a tremendous career. But it's that combination. I could say the same thing about Session. It's the combination of the pace and the skill that just excites you. And that's why these players are exciting us. We're dying for players like this, and now we have them all over the place. You know, it's unbelievable to have a conversation with you guys that I could talk about players with pace, players with skill, Sonny Aluko, Floyd Ayite, and now Tom Kearney is really showing what he's all about. We have all these players showing their skill now. It's just wonderful to see. So I'm glad that we could talk about Odoi, but it's really more than Odoi.
No, it is.
I mean,
Kearney in that in the Leeds match.
Ridiculous goal.
Three guys were trying to intercept him, and he's just dribbling around him like it's a practice. You know, like they're cones at practice.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. It was so entertaining to watch. Anyway, we'll get into that. But it was. And I'm really excited for this team, and I'm really excited for some of the players like Dennis. And you know what? He's just got a nice personality, too, if you've seen the interview with him. He just seems to be a good guy, which is helpful.
You know, and that's interesting. And Andrew, I'm going to go back to you because he just brought up a good point that I was thinking as well. Dennis Odoi seems to have a good attitude. Good team guys. I also saw an interview with Tomas Kalas, and that thought came to me as well. Tom Kearney. These guys that they bring in seem to have good attitudes and are team players. What are your thoughts on that?
I think a lot of that. I mean, I don't know how much of this is real or it's just what you see like on social media and stuff. But the guys actually seem to be getting along. Some of that just might be, you know, when things are going well, it's much easier to get along with your coworkers. But I saw like Tim Ream and Tom Kearney making a joke on Twitter the other day, and I've seen lots of, you know, like little Instagram posts of guys like playing little pranks on each other. Everyone seems to like get along, and they. No one thinks that they're like better than the team. They all understand like the teamwork involved and that they need to work together. And it's a much different kind of feeling that you got around the club than you have in years past.
Right. Right. And that's why I wanted to bring that up because, you know, listen, we've had some skillful players, some really excellent players. But for me, for Fulham to get to where we want them to be, guys, all the players need to be team players, fighting for the same cause. It's early days here, but it's very encouraging to see them playing together like you just said, Andrew, even kidding around because it seems like they get along and having that right attitude. I guess we'll find out something about them when they lose. You know, that's when you find out about a team as well. Again, it goes back to the reaction, the response. You know, being a team, being able to come together as a team to fight through the bad times, because there'll be bad times. That's why even though this isn't a loss, I think this is an opportunity to come together because it was a bad goal to give up. It really was. So this is an opportunity to come together. That's why I'm fascinated to see what their response is going to be against Cardiff City. All right, guys, let's move on. Let's go into the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable. I've got some very interesting topics for you, and I got one really interesting one to start off with. And, David, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts on Dan Crawford's article, Sky Sources, Two Little Words That Sum Up Football Journalism's Sad Decline? He goes into detail in his article. It was really an excellent article. I had Dan on the show. On our post-match show for Leeds, it's been a long time since I had Dan on. I read his article, and it really hit home. What are your thoughts about what he wrote, Dave?
Well, I tell you, I really enjoyed the article. In fact, I enjoy all the articles on Hamian.com. They're all very good. And Dan pulled no punches with this one. You know, over here in the States, we don't get Sky Sports. It's not, you know, what we have, but it's pretty much endemic to today's, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever world, that somebody's going to be in a hurry to get the scoop, and you can do air quotes around the scoop if you want to, out before anybody else, sources be damned. So there's so much out there that is just total nonsense. And in his article, he even quotes that one where, I mean, they got Scott Malone wrong.
I know.
Several times, it would appear. And it's still, I think, wrong, and he said on their website. So, yeah, he slams it pretty badly that, you know, Sky Sports, a lot of this is even their fault because, you know, they've sensationalized the transfer window and the closing of the transfer window so much. If you want to look for an analogy over here in the States, it's, you know, NFL draft. Nobody used to pay attention to the NFL draft. Now, you know, ESPN dedicates, what is it, a week or two to that, and it's this huge deal. So, you know, it's in the vein of being first, getting out there, stirring up the pot, whatever. But, yeah, if you haven't read it, I would recommend reading that one because Dan, he pulls no punches.
Absolutely. It was a very interesting take. And listen, he wrote what I've been thinking for the longest time. I'm talking about in general because I get bothered a great deal by some of these articles that are trying to get there first. It's about getting there first. In some cases, instead of getting it right, you know, I got to get there first. You know, let's get there first. Let's get it out there. And that's the most important thing. That is one of the things that has bothered me by some of these articles over the years that I've read, and that's why this hit home to me. And I'm glad that he wrote it. Andrew, what are your thoughts about this whole situation? Because you know, again, we see these articles all the time. He talks about one specifically, but it really is talking about it in general terms as well. It's you know, it's about journalism. It's about, you know, isn't it more important to get it right than be first? That's kind of what I took out of it. Is that what you took out of it?
Yeah, a little bit. And the other thing, the part that I really want to bring up is just the word sources. When people start just saying sources, you really have to stop and think about who the sources realistically could be. You know, if Fulham, like, for example, they're talking about Eddie Silvestri, who Fulham has been linked to by sources. It's not in Fulham's best interest to leak that Fulham is interested in him and is trying to work a contract for him, because that lets in other teams know what they're doing. It might let other teams come and, you know, try to poach players that Fulham have, or other players that Fulham are interested in, saying, hey, they're interested in this guy, so you don't want to sign there because he'll be at your position. So it really is not in Fulham's best interest at all to be leaking that stuff. The sources are usually from a team who wants to get rid of a guy and are trying to drum up interest by saying there are multiple teams involved, or most likely it's by agents. And the agents are always going to have a reason to be leaking things to the press rather than just getting it right. They always have another motivation behind it. They're not just doing that to get a good story out. They're trying to get something for themselves or their client. So whenever you're just like these anonymous sources are saying, you really have to stop and think about who these sources are before you, and like, what would their motivation behind getting this information out there be? You have to take that into account when you're thinking about the rumor.
Right. And, you know, again, that's a great point, because, you know, whenever I read an article, you know, I want to know what the source is. And if they say, like, a source close to, say, Ohio State, you know, for you, David, or a source close to the Sounders. Okay, I can buy that, but when they just say, like you said, Sky sources or general, or don't even say sources, and I've seen several articles that will just throw it out there without really even talking about sources. That's what frustrates me. And, you know, that's why when I read this, I was very happy that Dan wrote this, because it really is something that I've been frustrated for the longest time, and he finally wrote about it. So thank you, Dan, for writing about it, because it is frustrating. Listen, we all want the information. We all enjoy the speculation. My final thought on this, guys, is just get it right. Just get it right. If you're gonna put it out there, make sure it's solid. Get it right. That's all I'm gonna say on that. Does that make sense, Andrew?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, and I'm kind of the same way. It's kind of when I have an idea of who the source is, I'm a lot happier. And I mean, yeah obviously you'd like these rumors, and the rumors are fun, but just making stuff up doesn't really help anybody, and in the long run, it's going to hurt the people peddling the rumors. I mean, we've all heard the jokes about like the Daily Fail, simply because you know the rumors are horrible. If it's something in the Daily Mail, it might not be real.
Yeah, it's crazy how it. I mean, you know, we talk about it as Fulham supporters, but this is throughout the footballing world in England. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's not just Fulham that deal with these stories, but David, I mean, I'm sorry. I've been reading these for years now, and it just has driven me crazy. I just, you know, just give me a little bit more information. If you're going to throw it out there, you don't have to give us a name, but say a Fulham source, a source close to the agent, a source, whatever. Just give me more details than just throwing it out there to be first.
Well, I like Dan. He's got a nice way with words. You know, sometimes it's something that doesn't stand up to scrutiny but staggers around like a bemused drunk at closing time before falling pathetically to the floor. You know, he's going on about lack of sources and everything else.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. There's one I just saw earlier today. And again, I have to live on Twitter most of the time to get my hashtag FFC updates. And there was one going around that Tom Kearney was upset at Tim Ream and was looking to leave the team because of this or that. And it was absolutely patently false. And Tim Ream even tweeted back. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I didn't.
And he was mocking the entire thing and laughing at along with Kearney. So, come on. Come on, people.
Yeah, it's, you know, again, listen, it's the world we live in. I understand the thirst to be first, and that you have a job to do. And I'll just end by saying, if you're gonna say sources, try to be a little bit more specific, and take your time. Try to get the story right first. That's all I'm gonna say. Instead of trying to be first. Sorry, I have to throw it out there. All right, guys, let's move on, and let's talk about the money Fulham got for Ross McCormack, okay? And Andrew, I'm going to start with you because this is a topic on social media big time with Fulham supporters. So just going to ask you, do you think Fulham will spend the Ross McCormack money before the transfer window closes?
I think they'll spend some of it. I don't know. I don't know how much money how much of it do they actually have to spend. I don't know how their budgeting works. If they kind of knew they were going to sell Ross McCormack and some of their early transfers were made with that in mind, so maybe some of it technically has already been spent. But I think they're going to reinvest it, and I'd be shocked if they don't bring in like three or four more guys, you know, before the end of the transfer window. What's the frustrating thing about it is it's making transfers isn't as easy as everyone thinks it is. People play like Football Manager and FIFA, and they just go out there. But there's, you know, there's agents and players and other teams, and then there's other teams trying to get the same players. Just trying to get one of these transfers done is hard. And Fulham have signed 9 guys already. You know, we were talking before the beginning of the year, how many players do Fulham need to sign? And we're like, you know, 8 or 9 guys. Well, they've signed 9 guys. They're still trying to sign more. That's a lot of business to get done. So,
right.
I think that the money will get spent. I mean, if it doesn't get spent, it'll probably be because, you know, they just couldn't get things done with the other teams. And, you know, there were things outside of their control. But I think they have every intention of trying to spend all that money.
See, I'm right there with you, Andrew. Before I go to David, I just want to respond back to that. I think they have every intention of spending all of that. Savisa has said, you know, he wants to use the McCormack money, I'm paraphrasing, and more. And that's if they need that to get the players that he wants. I think the desire is there, but it takes two to make a deal. You just brought up a great point that people just say, oh, just spend it. Well, the other team has to be willing to to sell, and that has to be a negotiation. And as we get closer to the window closing, things start to happen. People don't like the fact that we have to wait to the end, but there's a reason for it, because that's when many deals get done, because the pressure's on, because the window's closing. So both sides then want to get it done, and that's why, you know, it's unfortunate, but we might have to wait to the bitter end to get all the players that we want. But I am confident that they will get the players that Slavisa wants, and I think they're going to spend the money. Will they spend it all? I don't know. But, David, I want to get your thoughts on this.
Like Andrew said, you know, most of the time this negotiation is going to take place behind closed doors, and you know, we really shouldn't know much about it unless an agent, you know, is trying to, you know, bump up the price by circulating rumors or whatnot. You know, unless it's a case of, you know, like Josebed when he was training at Mossberg Park for a week or two. Well, that's pretty clear that, you know, that's underway. But, yeah, I would suspect, I think that, you know, with Slavisa in charge and everybody seeing how we're doing, I saw another rumor, too, that said, well, since we're doing well, now they're not going to spend it. I don't think that's the case.
I don't believe that.
I don't believe that either. They know how thin the squad is. I mean, look, if you know, Parker's legs have seen more miles than my 2003 Honda Pilot, all right? So, yeah, he's been around for a long time. Something could, you know, happen with him in no time. A couple injuries in midfield, all of a sudden, what happens? The nine people we've brought in have really all been quality people. To get quality people, it takes time, it takes effort, it takes negotiations, and it takes money. And I sincerely think that we will, you know, spend. I had a note here that just says we'll spend most of it before the transfer window closes. And we're not going to know until the very end.
And that's how I feel, David. I think that they will spend money. I saw that speculation on Twitter as well, that they're happy with the club that they have and that they might not spend. And I don't agree with that, because they still need bodies in. They still need players.
They
so
do.
I don't see that. And I just watched a video earlier, guys, with Slavisa on the Fulham website, and he talks about the, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but he talks about the positions that he still wants to fill. He mentions in this video that, you know what, everyone's talking about filling Ross McCormack and Moussa Dembele, you know, obviously talking about a need for strikers. He then mentions, you just mentioned central midfielder, he mentions that. He also mentions center back. So he has targets, he has positions that he wants to bring in players for, and I feel confident that he's going to do that. I do. You know, I just think that we have to be a little bit patient. I know it's difficult the way it is right now. You know, as the window is starting to get closer to closing, we're all getting nervous. Do have confidence that Savisa is going to get his players, and I'll just share this with you guys because it's on the video. At the very end of the video, Savisa has this line, and I'll share this quote with you, because he's asked, do you feel confident, I'm paraphrasing, that you will be able to get the players you need? His response was, quote, I'm sure it will happen. And the fact that he's sure it will happen makes me feel that it's going to happen, because they know that they need players. It's just a matter of negotiations and getting the players in. It's you know, negotiations aren't easy. It takes time. And we just got to be a little bit more patient and see how it all plays out. But I do think that they will spend the money. And I'll go with you, David. I thought they would spend it all, but I agree with you. I could see them spending most of it, and hopefully they'll spend more than most of it. But we'll see. All right.
Yeah. I mean, number one, would you want to cross Slavisa? I would not. So
I wouldn't.
You know, there's part of it. Part of it. Number
two. I wouldn't want to tick off that guy.
I would want to do whatever I could.
David, I would want to do whatever I could, David, to get him the players that he wants. I certainly would, because,
yeah,
you know, it's still early days with this guy, but I think we've seen enough to know that he could be the right guy for us. So you have to give him, you know, again, I'll throw a Bill Parcells line to you. You know, you have to give him the groceries. You know, you have to give him, you know, you have to give him the players. So,
wait,
so
yeah, you don't want a repeat of the Mark Hughes scenario.
No.
You know,
no.
You don't want the club
don't
to be, you know, accused of not having enough ambition.
Right.
I mean, Slovisa uses the word ambition probably four times every presser. I mean, that's how important it is to him. So, you know.
He does. And
right now he's our guy, and let's keep him happy.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just to piggyback off that discussion, I'm going to read an article to you guys. It's a short one from Mike Gregg, because I found it very interesting as we're talking about players coming in. He actually kind of clarifies the loan situation for everyone. So I'm going to share this article with you. It's entitled "The Reason Why We Might Have to Wait." This is from Mike Gregg. It's on Viva El Fulham. So please do check it out if you haven't already. Here is Mike Gregg's article. While we all agree we need the 4 to 5 players in and many fans scrambling around looking at the bloated Premier League club squad saying, why can't we buy him? There may be a reason why we can't at the moment. I'm not sure if it's common knowledge that the loan system has changed this year. Basically, you can only loan players within the transfer window and also only from window to window. So no more emergency loans or even one-month loans. It has to be from August to January or a full season, and also no recall option. There are different rules for goalkeepers, but there always has been. So checking today, it was August 17th, there have only been 31 transfers or loans of players going from the Premier League to Championship teams. As Premier League teams start working on finalizing their 25-man squads, they seem reluctant to let players go at this time. My feeling is that we get to within the last couple of days of the window, a lot of moves will take place as clubs start to want to rid themselves of players not in the manager's plans. There's also another knock-on effect further down the league ladder. With no recall options or 30-day loans, the smaller clubs are having to commit financially to longer loans. Unless the loaning club picks up more wages, less players will go to League One and League Two sides. Once again, leaving very big squads for the Premier League teams to manage. So while we are bemoaning the fact that we haven't got the 4 or 5 in, if we're looking at the quality of player we need and they are in the Premier League, this may be a factor we need to take into account, and just maybe the last 48 hours of the window could be the best time to pick up some spare players that clubs are looking to offload as Premier League teams sort their squads out. Okay, so that was from Mike Gregg on Viva El Fulham. Andrew, I want to get your thoughts on that. I think Mike brings up some good points here and actually clarifies the loan situation moving forward.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, the teams, especially in the Premier League, they don't want to loan out players until they've got all their new players in, and the window's not closed yet. They're all still trying to bring in new players, so until they get those, it's kind of the domino effect. We're not going to let these guys go until we have these new guys, and everyone's kind of waiting for everything to get done. Like, two examples I can think of is, like, Matt Miazga at Chelsea and DeAndre Yedlin at Spurs. Both of those guys are probably going to get loaned out, and you just hear, like, rumors about teams and teams and teams over and over and over again all year, all window long. But it's probably not going to happen until late because, you know, Tottenham's still working to bring new players in, and Chelsea is still working to get new players in. And
right.
If something falls through, they might need one of those guys. So they're reluctant to let them go right away.
Right. And I think that's a factor of what's going on here, especially like Mike said, because I could see us going after a player on loan or maybe a Premier League player that they want to offload at the last minute, and that's why the last 48 hours we might see more moves by the club because of Premier League clubs then offloading players. David, what are your thoughts about this?
Well, I'll tell you what. Could you imagine if you were, I mean, any football club, not as much the Premier side, but any championship club especially, and you're going after, say, you've got your own 4, 5, 6 targets that you're going after to purchase, but then you've also got these 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever, players that you have potentially, you know, you've been in discussion with some Premier League teams, and so you've got all these moving parts, and nothing is going to come to fruition probably until that magic 24, 48 hours, because
right.
You can't yet. I mean, why would we go buy a $3 or $4 million player, whatever, if we could get one in on loan from a Premier League club for, you know, a better pricing at that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how all the dynamics work together, but it's got to keep everybody up at nights right now, I would say,
right,
in our club and all the other clubs as well. So I know it's why they get the big bucks, but it's gonna be hectic. And, you know, we think Twitter's full of rumors and innuendo now. Just wait until, you know, the last, you know, 24, 48 hours before the window slams shut. It'll be very interesting.
It will.
But I'm glad that he wrote that, because that before, you know, you could get a loan, get a loan or a transfer in with a, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge from somebody else. You could make up some reason, you know, emergency transfer, you know, my car got towed transfer, whatever you want, because it seems like you could get one for any reason for just about any amount of time. That's all done.
No, listen, I'm glad that Mike really spelled this whole situation out, because the dynamic has changed, and that also might be a reason why some of these players aren't moving yet. And it might take to the final 48 hours till we start seeing some movement. In the meantime, obviously, we want them to sign players, but if they're looking for players on loan, like I said, or even for players that are going to be offloaded at the last minute, it could happen in the last 48 hours, and that's unfortunate, but that's part of the business. And I'm glad that Mike wrote that. Very good take by Mike. All right, guys, let's move on, and I'm going to read something to you guys. I don't know if you guys saw on Twitter, talk about the Riverside Stand. There's been a lot of talk about the Riverside Stand. Well, I got an advanced copy of Shad Khan's program notes, and I'm going to read the part where he talks about the Riverside Stand, and also talks a little bit about George Cohen and the statue as well. But I'm just going to read just a small portion of this, because this is going to talk to the Riverside Stand. It's also going to talk about how he's going to back Slavisa as well. I'll start with that. But it's going to talk about Slavisa in the transfer market, also going to talk about the Riverside Stand and George Cohen. So I'm going to read all this to you guys and get your thoughts on it. So let's start here. This is from Shad Khan's program notes. We are recording this on a Friday, so you will see this in your program on Saturday if you're at the match. Here's Shad Khan. Quote, "The transfer window is open until August 31st, and I assure you that Slavisa has my support to explore all possibilities as we collectively pursue first-team excellence that will serve us this year and in seasons ahead. Off the pitch, we continue to consider options for the Riverside Stand that will meet our high and essential standards. It bears repeating that we're not merely looking into a renovation or remodeling of the Riverside Stand. That wouldn't come close to achieving the ultimate outcome, which would be a beautiful structure on the banks of the River Thames that would serve the needs of Fulham Football Club and our neighborhood for generations to come. We'll certainly be in touch with you when the time is right to share any news on this front. There is one change coming at Craven Cottage that is official, and that's the unveiling of the statue of George Cohen on Saturday, October 1st, just hours prior to our match against QPR. Like the man himself, you'll find the sculpture impressive and amazing. I must also commend, again, our supporters who played a role in making the statue reality with helping to raise funds for the excellent charitable causes that George himself nominated. The ceremony on October 1st will represent all the qualities that make Fulham so wonderful and unique, and I look forward to seeing George that day as we celebrate an occasion that the entire football world can appreciate and applaud. Until then, enjoy today's match, and thank you for your loyalty to Fulham Football Club. It's never taken for granted. Come on, you Whites." Shad Khan, Chairman, Fulham Football Club. All right, Andrew, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts of what I shared from the program notes that Shad Khan wrote here? Or, you know, these are his words. What are your thoughts of these statements from Shad Khan?
I kind of agree with it, and I always kind of knew that this was going to be a slow-going process. When the last time I went to Craven Cottage, they were just starting the initial planning, and they were explaining what they were going to do with barges bringing in material and all of the permits they were going to have to do, and how basically it's almost going to be tearing down the everything that's there and building it up. That's going to take probably a year or more to do once the construction even starts, and that doesn't even account all the planning and things like that. So, I mean, this is not like a quick process that people should expect right away. I am happy though that, I mean, it doesn't look like there was some thoughts that when the team got relegated that the whole thing might have been put on hold, and I haven't seen any evidence of that yet either, which actually kind of, you know, makes me feel a little bit better about it, because having a slightly bigger stadium with more amenities inside of London does give Fulham a huge financial incentive on a lot of teams in the Championship, and even a lot of teams if they were to get back to the Premier League in the Premier League as well, because, you know, having an extra 10,000 seats and having all the hospitality suites and things, that increases your game day revenue. And because you can charge more just being in London, it just makes the team more valuable and makes it easier to compete. And especially the way with all the financial fair play rules that are coming into effect, you can't really spend more than you make. So maximizing how much you make is a big deal.
Okay, very good there, my friend. David, over to you. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, it's nice to always see Mr. Khan publicly back Slavisa like that. I mean, there's been no sign that he hasn't, but it's always good to see when he does. And on the Riverside Stand, you know, like Andrew said, if it ever gets done, that will be great. But his several sentences about that said a whole lot of nothing, really, when it came down to dates, times, anything else. So it was really just like, hold, please, and then, you know, we'll be back in touch later. But I go back to, we talked about this before, Chris Gilbertson's article, excellent article, or I'm sorry, when he was on Cottage Talk.
Yep.
It was over the summer, I guess it was, or maybe it was even late spring, when he talked about all the different hoops and hurdles that were involved in even getting approval to do anything with the Riverside Stand. And the date to put a shovel in the ground, as I remember, was July 3rd, I think it was. And I don't think a single spade full of dirt has been overturned at this point. So, you know, it may be something to come back to Chris with and say, well, do they have to go through the planning again, do everything again? Because that approval process,
I don't know. You know,
was brutal.
Yeah, it's a great point, and Chris really nailed that and went into detail exactly what would entail. So I don't know, and that might be worth me talking to Chris again, getting back on to see what he's learned about that. I really don't know. That's a very good point, David, because we haven't got any clarification on this, but the whole situation itself, like I said, the article doesn't really tell us anything specifically. It just says that, you know, basically it's all in general terms that they still plan on doing it, but it doesn't tell us anything other than that.
Now, we can only hope that when they unveil the statue on October 1st, that we beat the pants off of a QPR. So that would only be right and just, I think, at that point.
Oh, I totally agree with you there, my friend. All right, guys, just for time's sake, we're going to wrap up this show shortly. But like I said, I can't believe I built this show and did not build it to talk about the match tomorrow, which is ridiculous on my part. That's a gold mine in itself. So
our first one.
Well, no, I've had plenty of gold mines in this show.
Well,
Andrew, I'm
going to
start with you. I want your prediction for this match, and just share with me your thoughts, how you think things are going to go down tomorrow at Craven Cottage.
I think that Fulham are probably going to score. They're probably going to score fairly early, and my prediction I did with inside Cardiff City, I said I thought they'd score two goals in the first half, and then I think that Slavisa might at that point try to prove a point to his team, maybe go a little bit more defensive and try to lock that down and keep a clean sheet, and so just to kind of prove to everyone that they can do that. And that's kind of, you know, the sort of game that I'm envisioning. Fulham, you know, they they've created plenty of chances in the first half. I'm expecting a couple of them to actually go in this time. And then they just kind of lock it down and get out of there with a 2-0 victory.
Okay, very good. Mr. Kettlehake, what is your prediction and thoughts on the match tomorrow?
I'm also going with 2-0 to Fulham. I wrote that down ahead of time and firmly believe that we'll score one in the first and one in the second half. And I'm like Andrew, I'm hoping that Slavisa says, you know, I hate it when teams, you know, park the bus and just do nothing but defend, defend, defend. That's why when he put Josebet in, you know, I know it raised a couple of eyebrows, and I'm for that because I like to be able to keep, fine, you have a defensive midfielder, but you have an attacking midfielder to help out instead and keep the ball, you know, moving. The best way to keep it out of your net is to keep it out of your half. Yeah, I think you're right, Andrew. I think he's going to probably try to prove somebody right, but I want a clean sheet, and I think it's very possible. I think Cardiff are a little brittle, a little fragile, and I think, like your friend said that you had been talking to or posting with, you get one in, it could be us like last year. You get one in,
right.
Heads drop,
and that's
away
it.
We go.
Exactly, and that's why, you know, talk about the heads drop, David, before I give my prediction. That's why I'm fascinated to see how Fulham respond. This goes back to my whole thing about reaction, because we would expect their heads to drop. I would expect them to come out not strong tomorrow. That would be the team last season and a couple seasons ago as well. So that, to me, I want to see that this is not that team anymore, David. I want to see that this is the team we think that they're going to be. So that's why I'm really looking forward to this match tomorrow, because I want to see the reaction. I want to see if their heads are not going to drop, that they're not going to be playing with fear, because I thought Fulham played with a good amount of fear last season. They should play with no fear. They as Savisa would always say, they need to be brave. This is the match where you need to take it to them and be brave. And guys, my prediction, I've already made it. It's going to sound boring. It's 2-0 as well, because I've already made it. So we're all saying 2-0, and I'm going to go to both of your points. I think it's important that they get a clean sheet. I do. I think it's important to Slavica, but I also think it's important to that team. So I'm going to go for 2-0, and because I it's funny because Curtis Hurd had 2-0 as well. We're all predicting 2-0. For whatever reason, we're all predicting 2-0.
That's all right. That's good. If we say it enough, maybe it'll happen.
Yeah, exactly, David. All right. Before we go, I want to get final thoughts from both of you. First, to you, David, final thoughts?
Final thoughts, really looking forward to this. I haven't felt such optimism about the club in years. I mean, years. The last season in the Premier League, I was able to watch every match on TV because it just worked out that way. And I can't tell you how depressing it was just watching that slow slide into relegation and despair. And this is the first time. And actually, it started in preseason. I know preseason is not supposed to matter, and you're not supposed to get your hopes up based upon that. But we were so dominant and let in so few goals and did so well, and it's carried over into the full season, that I'm just – right now I'm very, very optimistic and very psyched about this. I can't wait to see what the rest of the season has in store. And last thought, I just saw something come out while we were talking that Sammy James is not going to be doing Fulham FC TV anymore.
This is correct.
And that's a shame, because I quite liked Sammy, and I'd like to thank him for his time last year and his entertainment and the fact that he got my last name pronounced right on multiple occasions. So, Sammy, thank you very much, and best of luck in all your endeavors in the future.
Okay, very good. And I'll just mention this, David, on the previous show, I did mention Sammy, because I did see that today, and he will be missed, and I told him that. I tweeted that to him. He will be missed. I enjoyed what he did for FFC Radio, and he made last season more enjoyable because I enjoyed it. We all listened to the matches. We're listening to Gentleman Jim. But to have a pre-match show, halftime, and post-match thoughts was wonderful. And Sammy, you will be missed, my friend, if you do listen to this. And this will be the second show I'm saying it, but I don't care. You're a good guy. I wish you the best in the future. Andrew, over to you. Your final thoughts.
It's very, very similar to what you guys just brought up, in that I'm enjoying watching the team. Like, especially last year, it was just a slog at time, especially when you can only watch the game, you know, a day later, and you know the result. You know what you're going to be watching, and you're like, have to sit there and watch it anyway. Yep. And it was sometimes felt like torture. And this year, I'm actually excited to go back and watch the games. Even like the game against Newcastle, I actually watched it 3 times. I watched it live in a bar, and then
I watched it 10 times. If I'm being honest.
And then I watched it when I got home. I had subscribed to Fubo TV, and I did use their DVR service to record it, and I watched it again, and then. It was like Sunday afternoon. I was just flipping through my guide, and it was on my BN Espanol. They were showing a replay of it just at random, and I'm like, okay, I'll watch it again. This time with Spanish announcers.
Muy bien.
No, that's great, Andrew. Honestly, it's I'm right there with you, and it's funny because you brought up something that I do. People ask me, do you watch all the matches? Guys, I watch all the replays, and some of them, like you just mentioned, are brutal. So the fact that I can watch something, even after the fact, after they won, and just sit back and enjoy it, is unbelievable. Listen, I watched the 1-1 draw right before I did the post-match show with Dan Crawford. I enjoyed it, and I knew how it was going to end, guys. I knew how it was going to end. But I enjoyed the performance. I enjoyed how Fulham played, even though the result did not go our way in the end. I want to watch Fulham Football Club. My final thought is really dealing with what we're talking about. I watch them win, lose, or draw. I watch all of them on the replays. And it's just what I do. And when they win, like I just mentioned, David, you laughed, I'll watch it 10 times if I have to. I don't care. I'll drive my poor wife crazy. Why are you watching it again? I don't care. Because I can see a change. I just hope that this is really the beginning of something, guys. That really, my thought is more to do with, I hope this is really the beginning of something. Well, only time will tell. All right, guys, it is time to wrap up the show. This is really a great episode. Thank you so much, guys, for doing this. I've enjoyed all of these episodes we've done with the writers of Cottagers Confidential. Max has been great. James has been great. Thomas has been great. David, you're always great. And, of course, editor-in-chief, Andrew Beck, you are always great. Andrew, thank you so much for doing this with me.
Oh, no problem. It's a great, fun time.
And, Mr. Kettlehake, you're welcome anytime. And best of luck to Ohio State.
Well, we'll see. But, Russ, thanks for having me on, as always. Like I said in the beginning, especially when they're winning, it's so much more fun.
It is. Of course it is. Of course it is. And let's just, you know, knock on wood. Let's hope it continues.
Yeah, touch wood right now. There we go.
Yes, yes. But it is time to wrap up the show. For Andrew and David, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Russ. Cheers, Andrew.